Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by The Adept Church, Navigating Between a Rock and a Hard Place, a new book by F. Douglas Bowe Jr. that helps congregations develop realistic roadmaps for navigating between a rock and a hard place. The book outlines a clear process for defining a church's current reality in order to make strategic decisions to determine the direction it needs to go. This theologically grounded yet practical guide is for church leaders seeking to save their churches. Learn more and order now at churchleadership.com/books. Is your church caught between a rock and a hard place? In this episode, we speak with F. Douglas Bowe Jr. about his new book, The Adept Church, and what churches can do to move toward a more interactive way of connecting with others. Dr. Bowe is director of the Lewis Center and holds the James C. Logan Chair in Evangelism and E. Stanley Jones Professorship at Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C.
I'm Ann Michael, host of this episode of Leading Ideas Talks podcast, and I'm talking today with Lewis Center Director F. Douglas Bowe Jr., who is my colleague here at the Lewis Center. In fact, he's my boss. He also teaches evangelism here at Wesley Seminary. If you've listened to some of our Leading Ideas Talks podcasts, you know Doug as a host of our podcast, but today he is our featured guest because he has a newly released book from Abington Press, The Adept Church, Navigating Between a Rock and a Hard Place. So Doug, congratulations on the book. I'm excited for the opportunity for you to talk with our listeners about what you have to say to congregations who are caught between a rock and a hard place. I think everybody can relate to that in some way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I appreciate being on this side for a change.
Good. So since the title of the book is The Adept Church, can we begin by you explaining what is that image of an adept church that you're holding up?
The adept image for me sort of relates to a couple of things. When I think of adept, I think of a very nimble sort of congregation, a congregation that is able to actually navigate and move forward even as things are changing around it. The image that first came to mind when I thought about adept was actually airplanes and aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. So when you think about them trying to land a plane on this really small thing, you have to be really adept at making sure you can hit that target and not go too fast or too slow and make sure you can do it well. Mm-hmm. I think for congregations, the connection for me is that we often think about congregations, we try to move them from being possibly struggling to the greatest congregation in the world, where they become a mega church. And I fall into this trap myself. But an adept church is one that really is taking baby steps. So they're navigating in a way where they may just take one step forward and then maybe another step forward. It's not a matter of trying to go from zero to 100, but it's going from 0 to 1 or maybe 0 to 2. So mm-hmm. to do that, you have to be adept and navigate in the right way.
Great. I think that's really helpful. I assume you wrote this book because you assume that there are a lot of churches that are inadept, that they're not able to do that well. And so I wondered if you could describe what some of the problems or barriers are that prevent churches from being adept in the manner that you describe.
Absolutely. I do believe there are a lot of churches that are struggling. And the way I frame it in the book is I really talk about congregations falling into three categories: swamp, reservoir, and canal. And swamp congregations are those congregations that are really struggling. If you can think about, here I'm telling my age, back when you would watch old movies, the swamp was really this place no one really wanted to go. It was just an undesirable place. Unfortunately, too many of our congregations resemble a swamp, where folk really just don't want to go to those places because they're not friendly and they sort of get swallowed up.
They're inwardly focused.
They're very inwardly focused. They're only thinking about themselves. And the reality is many of them just don't care about the future. They literally just figure as long as somebody's taking care of those of us who are here, we're fine with that. Mm-hmm. Reservoir congregations are a little bit more outward focused. Oftentimes, they have a connection to the community, but they often act like a social agency. They feel like we can give clothes, we can give food to the community, but in many cases, they're still not really inviting the community to be a part of who they are. And then canal congregations, if you imagine a canal where it's sort of flowing and connecting as it goes, are those congregations truly connecting with the community in a way that's helpful and inviting the community to really be a part of who they are? So in-depth congregations are swamp congregations and also to a certain extent reservoir congregations. Those congregations tend to be more inwardly focused. They struggle with making real connections with people outside of themselves. They struggle with inviting people to participate in anything that is not usually worship focused. They struggle with even having a discipleship or formation sort of system in their congregation. They often struggle with even simple things such as welcoming guests who may show up at their door. So these congregations are struggling with these things that can help them to take those baby steps to be more outwardly focused. Hopefully, in reading the book, what you learn is how do I take those baby steps to become more adept at navigating ways that I can connect more with people outside of the congregation and not be so inwardly focused.
Yeah, so this imagery that you use of relating different congregations to these different bodies of water, a swamp that's kind of self-contained and inward focused, a reservoir that's like a storage place, and then a canal that serves to connect different bodies of water. It's very vivid imagery. So I wondered if, you, for the benefit of our listeners, you can say a bit about where that imagery comes from.
Absolutely. Howard Thurman is one of my favorite individuals. And in one of his works, Meditations of the Heart, he uses this imagery to talk about individuals. And I adapted his imagery to think about congregations. And I think of course, when you're doing anything, nothing fits perfectly, but I do believe it does give us a sort of a nice schematic to really think about the places many of our congregations fall. I mean, most of us can clearly picture a swamp and sort of how eerie and also how it really drains life out of things. A reservoir where you're driving down a road and you see something containing or holding water that has the possibility of having great life, but it has to release the water to actually give life to other things. Mm-hmm. And then a canal that sort of just flows along and connects with other things provides an image of something that's actually doing that in a congregation that's actually doing that work. So that imagery, I think, is really helpful as we think about congregations and how, in most cases, they're not just one of those things. They can actually fall in all of those categories. You may have a ministry that's a canal ministry,
right?
And you may also have another place that is a swamp. So it's not a matter of that I'm strictly just one thing in many cases. You really could be all three at the same time.
Yeah, well, it really is fascinating imagery. And when I first read the manuscript of your book, I was very struck by your adaptation of this idea from Howard Thurman. I mean, it's organic. I mean, in a sense, it's biblical. I mean, the idea of living water. But also, you know, the sense of movement, I think, that's inherent in the imagery of water is really helping to lead people where you want to go. I have two questions about the idea of a canal congregation, because in a sense, that's the highest order of congregation
right.
that you describe. I mean, when you set up the schema, everybody would say, boy, I want to be a canal
that's
congregation.
That's exactly right.
So I have two questions about it. First of all, should every congregation seek to be a canal congregation? Is that possible, or should it be their aspiration?
I think it should be their aspiration, but not every congregation is going to be a canal congregation. The reality is, for some congregations, being a reservoir is going to be probably the best that can happen. And that's okay, because that means they were probably a swamp and they took a step forward. And even to break it down more, I think we have to think in terms of even ministry areas, or even in terms of different things we're trying to accomplish at the church. We're not going to be able to move everything to become a canal, but it might be that we can improve our worship and that becomes a canal, but our outreach might be a reservoir. So mm-hmm. I think the goal has to be, again, thinking in terms of baby steps instead of thinking that we're going to make everything perfect. There is no perfect congregation. We are constantly trying to work to improve different things. And the reality is, as soon as we get to becoming a canal, probably in one area, we're probably going to lose it just as quickly, because something can happen to, again, disrupt the very right. thing that we've created. So this is, you're constantly trying to sort of build towards this aspiration.
Right, but I mean, that almost plays in with the organic, natural nature of this metaphor, because, you know, everything is always in a period of regrowth and regeneration and even death. And so nothing's ever going to stay at its, you know, it's going to be a continual cycle of development in any kind of organic system. So if an adept church is one that begins to take the small steps that lead it in the direction that it needs to be going in, for a congregation that's a swamp, and I know they're all different, and this is contextual, but what would you think of as a one step in the right direction that a swamp congregation might need to take to begin to turn itself outward?
A couple of things. The first is, I think oftentimes congregations aren't honest with themselves. Mm. And a part of what I'm hoping in writing this is, as they read it and engage, is really looking in the mirror and being honest with themselves of, am I truly a swamp congregation, or where do I have those swamp ministries or other places in my church?
So, and honest self-assessment.
Honest self-assessment is critical. Mm-hmm. And then once you do the honest self-assessment, I think the next step is, then we have to figure out and discern sort of how do we actually take, to borrow from Lovett Weems, the next faithful step that can help us to actually take that baby step and move forward. If we think about being connecting with the community, it may be for a swamp congregation, the next faithful step may be something as simple as simply inviting people in a community to a dinner at the church. Now, this is not a huge step, and still it's inwardly focused because mm-hmm. you're inviting people into the church, but for a swamp congregation, that's a big step. Another way to think about it for a swamp congregation, it may be that them actually taking and doing a food basket or providing dinner for a family and community could be another faithful step.
Because so that's moving them from a swamp to a reservoir, basically.
Yeah, it's moving them from a swamp to a reservoir. So it's thinking about those things that within their resources they can do, but actually still moves them out of their comfort zone.
Right.
I mean, the key is oftentimes we get comfortable with the status quo and we want to stay right there. And it's hard to move away from that status quo. So for a swamp congregation, it's not going to be all of a sudden you're going to be this church that is inviting everybody to come and participate in all of these activities. I mean, that's usually just too big of a step. But if you can even just mm-hmm. take the baby step, that's going to help you to sort of make a difference in the community and also help you to stop being so inwardly focused.
So in the book, I think it's pretty clear that you see this as a progression.
Yeah.
So for a congregation that's a swamp, its first goal is to move toward being a reservoir congregation. You
Absolutely.
Can't go from being a swamp to a canal, right? You have to move up the
That
ladder.
Is absolutely, that is mm-hmm. why. I won't say anything's impossible with God, but right. in most cases, you're going to move from being a swamp to a reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my thinking is, if you can do that, it's going to make a tremendous difference in your church.
Right, because I mean, I think one of the things I appreciated in your book is that you, even though you identify canal as the ultimate place that congregations would want to aspire to. I mean, being a reservoir congregation can be a very good and helpful thing.
Absolutely.
Right.
We need more reservoir congregations. Yeah. The reality is we do not have enough reservoir congregations. Mm-hmm. And more of our congregations are actually declining towards a swamp.
Right.
You know, instead of moving the other direction.
Well, let me ask the same question about a reservoir congregation. If a congregation has sort of been comfortably ensconced in the place of being a reservoir congregation, and I think we can all think of congregations that's where they are, and they're pretty happy being in that place.
Right. Yes.
What would be first steps for them to begin to move toward being a canal congregation?
For a reservoir congregation, the challenge is really moving from sort of a social agency mentality to one where you're actually partnering with people and letting them partake in the work you're trying to do. So for example, in many cases, reservoir congregations have food ministries or they have a clothing closet, and they give thanks to the people in the community. And the expectation is we're doing great work because we're giving you these goods. The way you alter that is think about how do we actually partner with the community and stop giving things to people and we start doing things with the people in the community.
Right. So it's a different paradigm.
It's a different paradigm.
Mission engagement, community engagement. I mean, maybe mission isn't even probably the right word.
That's right.
Yeah. So how does the church effectuate that mindset shift? Because that is a really big change. And for a lot of congregations that are, I think, are comfortable in that social service mindset, you know, you can say, wouldn't it be better if you were partnering, but getting them to actually, you know, change their thinking and their way of understanding their ministry, I think is hard.
I think it's absolutely very challenging. And again, I think a couple of things are important. The first is it means you're going to have to really start talking and engaging with people and asking them, how is it that we can actually partner with you in the work we're doing and not simply be giving goods to individuals? Mm-hmm. And having those important conversations. Too often, what we do in our congregations, because we like to meet, is we meet within the committee of the church and we make a decision that we think is good for the community, but we haven't involved the community in a conversation. So simply starting by having conversations with people in the community is a huge first step that can sort of move you out of that social agency mentality. Mm-hmm. The second thing that I would say that is important is really thinking about not simply trying to attract people to your church, because we sort of get into this attractional church model, but how do we actually move into the community and engage people in a way that they can not necessarily step foot in our church, but we can actually be the church in the community.
Right. I mean, it did seem very much to me that the move from being a reservoir to a canal was very much the move from an attractional mindset into a more missional mindset.
And that piece is really challenging because congregations really want people to come to them. I mean, that's the way we've been built and taught for many years. So the idea of shifting that to where we're going to the people and willing to do things with individuals where they are is a big shift. It may be, you know, you have a small gathering at a house that becomes a Bible study or something else, or you have something that's taking place at a local diner where people are doing like dinner church and other things. But it's making that shift where everything does not have to be located in a church building, but we're happy to actually be the church out in the community.
So I assume as you were writing this book and developing your thinking around these three categories of churches, swamp congregations, reservoir congregations, and canal congregations, that you had in your mind's eye certain maybe, you know, actual congregations that exemplified these categories. And I don't want to put you on the spot, really, but I'm wondering, since Canal is our exemplar, did you have particular congregations in your mind's eye that you were thinking of when you thought about congregations that have achieved this level where they're truly serving as a connector? And being very missional and outward focused in their way of being?
there were a couple of congregations that I thought about in this way, because again, I think, you know, there's no one perfect congregation, but you take a congregation like in this area of Ebenezer AME that has done very well of connecting with individuals and has expanded to connecting with them through their online sort of
thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that I see them. Another obvious one, of course, within the United Methodist Church is Church of the Resurrection, that, of course, mm-hmm. has always worked hard to be a connector and to sort of make those connections in the community. And even some smaller congregations. There are congregations like Emory Fellowship that is not a mega church, but certainly has thought about what it means to be more missional focused in a community and not as focused inwardly on just trying to get people to the church. So it's not a matter of being large. It's really a matter of the mindset that you bring.
Yeah, those are helpful examples, and I know maybe not all of our listeners are familiar with those particular three congregations, but I think what I'm intrigued in hearing you name those three is that they are all very much traditional churches in many ways.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not something wild and crazy or totally different than what people think about when they think about church. They are very much, so you would recognize those churches very much by their patterns of life and worship and mission, and yet they have succeeded in truly connecting with their neighbors. That's helpful for me to have those in mind.
Yeah, I think sometimes we, and I'm just as guilty as anyone else, we like the innovative, new, creative thing and think about, hey, let's see what we can do. But the reality is, as you mentioned, with all of those congregations, they do innovative things within
right.
those congregations, but what has really worked is their commitment to really connecting with people outside of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been their focus, and that's the reason I believe that they've been successful in terms of their ministries.
Mm-hmm. So this is a leadership book,
yeah.
And if I'm reading correctly between the lines of the book, I think what you're saying is that the reason that so many churches are stuck, either as swamps or reservoirs, is essentially a consequence of leadership failure. That's why they're inept, I think. And so I wondered if you could name what some of the leadership challenges are that you think keep these churches stuck between a rock and a hard place, as you say.
Absolutely. I think one of the challenges that congregations have is in their decision-making process. And this is where the leadership failure comes mm-hmm. in. And the way I describe it is, in many cases, what we're doing in congregations, to oversimplify, is we're adopting either our denominational traditions or greater Christian traditions, and we just take them on and do them exactly as we've been taught. So you could use communion. We adopt communion. We read it right out of whatever book we may have, and that's the way we do communion. The other way that we make decisions is we adapt it. So, you know, instead of just adopting it completely, we adapt what we have to make it fit our context and what we're trying to accomplish. So you could take communion again. I've seen in youth group where instead of doing communion in a traditional sense, they'll use pizza and soda and something creative like that. Now, some people may find that sacrilegious, but, you know, but it's still, they're adapting this practice of communion. And when I say to be adept, what you have to really be able to do is make decisions well in terms of when do we just adopt things and when do we really have to adapt and really be creative and think about them differently in our decision-making process, and that we don't take enough time in congregations and thinking about decision-making in that sort of way. We tend just to fall into this trap where we just keep doing the same things over again, and that's why we continue the status quo. My argument is those congregations that are moving forward are adept because they're much better at their decision-making process. So they know that, you know, this is not going to fit for this context, so we have to adapt it so that it's going to make sense. So we don't want to lose the tradition, behind it, but what we want to do is figure out how to carry that tradition forward in a way that the people in this contest can relate to it.
Yeah, so being adept is a matter of being able to take new ideas, but apply them in ways that are contextually appropriate, as opposed to just copycatting what you see other churches doing. And I think that really does require a high level of leadership acumen and wisdom. So in the book, you talk about some things that congregations can do to kind of approach this kind of decision-making better. You want to name just a couple?
Absolutely. The first, I believe, is discernment. I mean, I think too often we don't really take enough time to actually discern what it is or where it is God is leading us. So I believe that discernment is critical. And I try to emphasize it's not just the pastor that should be discerning. Oftentimes, the congregation looks to the pastor to be the one individual who does all the discerning, or by default, the pastor believes they have to be the one who discerns. But really, the whole congregation should be in discernment around decisions that are going to be made. And beyond discernment, the other one that I think, well, let me name two others. The other is evaluation. We are horrible at evaluating. You know, we will make a decision and we'll go with it, but no one ever comes back and evaluates whether or not we think it was going to fulfill what we were hoping. Are we really within the mission that we wanted to accomplish? So evaluating consistently is critically important. And then the other one that I was going to say is the goal is to form really good habits. I think too often we form bad habits in congregations and we continue those bad habits. But my hope is that as you start really working with this decision-making matrix that I lay out, that it helps you to form better habits for making decisions that is going to help your congregation to move forward.
So that's a matter of leadership protocol and discipline.
That's
of,
right.
Of how leaders come together to make decisions.
That's right.
In a way that's informed and contextually astute and so forth.
That's right.
Yeah. These things are hard.
They're very hard. They're not easy. And I try to be honest of saying, I mean, this isn't a sort of magic wand that all of a sudden all your problems are going to go away because, I mean, you're constantly working at these things. All businesses are working at these things.
I mean, right. Any institution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think these struggles are common across any type of institution. So in the book, you use the story of Esther from the Old Testament as a case study of what it means to lead adeptly when you're caught between a rock and a hard place. And woven throughout the chapters of the book are these interludes where you continually return to this book of the Bible for illustrations. And I found that very surprising in a way, because it's not often that we see female figures in the Bible getting a lot of attention in a leadership book. But I found it refreshing also because I've tended to see what's wrong with Esther's story from a feminist perspective, and I think you kind of liberated her from that by really pointing out some of the ways in which Esther was a very creative creative leader. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about why you selected that Bible passage and why you think Esther's example is important.
I think it's critically important. I want to say first that certainly the feminist critiques and women's critiques of Esther are critically important, and I'm not trying to downplay those critiques at all. But I also think that Esther's story is helpful and important because Esther truly is stuck between this rock and a hard place. I mean, she's stuck between sort of her cousin who represents, you know, the Jewish people on one side, and she's stuck because she's been put in this place that's not a great place, where she's a part of the harem in the court, and now she's being asked to basically save her people, and she's like, okay, you know, what do I do with this decision? And for many of us, if we were stuck in there, I mean, the first thing would be self-preservation. Just, you know, I'm going to worry about myself, and I'm not going to worry about anything else. And what I try to suggest is what makes Esther really a great case study is that Esther really sort of gathers herself and then starts thinking creatively about, I may be stuck here, but I'm going to be willing to take a risk and try to figure out how can I move this forward in a way that I can help the king to see what's really going on, but also then help to save my people. And I think that the leadership that she sort of exemplifies when she does this, that and a part of it, she actually then really starts even directing her cousin and saying, okay, this is what I need you to do.
Yeah, I really appreciated how you pointed out how she really claims agency as this story unfolds.
That's right.
and sort of takes control of the situation in a way that leads to a positive outcome.
Absolutely does. Now, I will say at the end of the story, she sort of gets quiet again because she disappears and Mordecai is the one that gets lifted up. But in between that, she certainly does take the agency that I think is critical.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And I think any of our listeners who pick up the book, I think will really enjoy reading the parts of the book where you use this Book of Esther as a case study. So to begin to wrap this up, I wondered if not a hugely long book, but man, you cover a lot of ground. I mean, we got the Book of Esther, and we've got the canal and the reservoir and the swamp, and we've got adapt, and then we've got all these leadership tips on how to make decisions better, and you really cover a lot of ground in this relatively short book. And so, if there's sort of one big idea or tip that if somebody were going to take something away from listening to this podcast or from reading this book, what would you tell somebody to work on immediately to begin to move in the direction that you want people to be going in?
The one thing would be, how can you really start making your congregation nimble? How is it that you can not get stuck and just supporting the status quo, but you really think about moving forward and taking that baby step where you're going from zero to one, one to two, where it's making a difference in transforming your congregation. So that would be my one takeaway, is don't get stuck in the status quo. Be nimble, move forward, and have the aspiration that you can become a reservoir or a canal congregation.
Yeah, well, and I think this book will really help people think about how they can best do that. So I want to thank you for adding yet another fine book to the library of resources that we have from our Lewis Center authors. You've got a number of other excellent books, but this also is a wonderful addition. And thank you for talking with us and sharing these ideas with our listeners today.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, Mark DeMaz asserts that churches need to create multiple streams of income by leveraging the value of their people, money, and buildings to bless the community and advance the gospel.
We as pastors, ministry leaders, have to recognize the need for a disruptive shift in our approach to funding the church. And again, simply put, that's creating multiple streams of income, or to say it another way, how do we as pastors and ministry leaders learn to leverage the assets of a church, which is people, money, and buildings, to bless the community, advance the common good and the gospel, all the things we want to do, we are doing, but at the same time, by leveraging those assets, get some measure of return, if you will, on investment.
Thank you for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.